Welcome to Rebecca Neal, the podcast, where I, Rebecca, your host, share thought-provoking episodes with you to help you take your life from where it is now to where you want it to be. I have a huge desire and passion to help people just like you get out of their own way and start living the life that they deserve. I'm here to help you feel empowered, educated, and inspired to get into massive action and create change in your life today. Join me weekly as I share insights into the online business world, social media, and many other motivational topics, and also interview some of the world's most incredible humans to help you become the best version of yourself. Today's guest is Blake Worrell Thompson, one of Australia's most sought-after lifestyle and performance coaches. Having spent 17 years creating his unique and innovating coaching style, Blake provides his clients with the skills to propel and prosper in their lives. The awakening transformations and rapid growth of Blake's clients has seen him work with everyone from world-class entertainers and professional athletes to organizations and entrepreneurs, forever challenging the status quo and society's norm, which I love about Blake and something I love about following him on Instagram, because you guys know that I'm also about this. Blake delves into many areas that most people are afraid to explore, which brings with it wisdom, methods, and learnings to go with his radical, honest approach. Working with Blake will help you open up to a world with no limitations, aligning and redesigning your subconscious to drive nothing but fulfillment in every area and break through the barriers that are holding you back. Let's dive into today's episode. Hello and welcome to Rebecca Neal, the podcast. Today's guest is Blake, and I'm so excited to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Beck.
It's awesome. So I start my podcast with this question. How do you have your coffee? Do you drink coffee at all?
So, great question. I've never had a coffee in my life. Yep, I know. It's one of those things. And, well, the closest thing I've had to a coffee is a few espresso martinis every now and then.
But oh, so you've had caffeine.
I've had a bit of caffeine in my life. But outside of that, I've never had a coffee as such. So that definitely puts me in a small group.
So didn't you live in Melbourne? Isn't that the coffee hub of the world?
It is. I don't know why I never got into it. A lot of friends obviously got into it at a very young age, but I've just never got into it. And I figure now, if I've come this far, there's no need to. And I really struggled with, you know, concentration, a bit of ADD, anxiety, all those type of things as a kid. So I would have been in a much worse position had I gone down that path. So I'm kind of happy that I've stayed off it.
So do you have like a ritual in the morning? Do you drink some other fancy pants Byron Bay drink?
I don't. There's a lot of very fancy drinks floating around here. But no, I don't. I obviously have my smoothie after training, but no special drinks.
No, there you go. And that's why I love to ask this question, because you never know what someone's going to say, and it just creates such a platform for someone. So it's really cool. So tell us a little bit more about who you are, what you do, your greater mission and purpose that's leading you down this road. Let's take people on a bit of a journey, because I know you've definitely been on a bit of a journey yourself.
Yeah. So I, like many people in our space now, spent a good portion of my life in the health and fitness space. Would have spent, I think it was about 15, 16 years in it. And in the last few years of that, I really started to lose a little bit of passion for sets, reps, steamed broccoli and chicken and that kind of talk, and really wanted to have a bigger impact than I was in the four walls of a gym. So my natural development took me down the path of NLP, which must have been probably 4 years ago now. And by that stage, I was already really starting to have a strong passion for human behavior, mental health, mindset, you know, peak performance and everything kind of in between. And I think, you know, when you really start to unpack your values, it's pretty easy, and I'm sure we'll go into that at some stage, it's pretty easy to see why I was led down that path and why I'm so passionate about it in terms of, you know, my upbringing and definitely the number of my struggles. And then in the last year of running a fitness business in Sydney, it just really died in me. And, you know, I feel super fortunate to have spent 15 years out of 16 in something that I really love and was really passionate. You know, so many people in our world are still trying to find that thing. So for me to find something that, you know, took me 15 years of passion and then died in me, I feel super lucky to have found that. And then the transition out of that more into the coaching mindset space has happened over the last 4 years, but definitely a lead-in period where I was already starting to coach people in an informal way while I was helping them at the gym. So now it's very much, it's a bit of a mix of a business that I've got with two mates called Momentum, which is a men's business. And for us, Momentum is very much about making it appealing, accessible and attainable for blokes. If you look at the men's space at the moment, and I have full respect for everyone who's playing in that space, but the majority of us Aussie kind of blokes probably wouldn't be drawn to the options that are out there. And I feel that over the next 3 to 5 years, we're really going to flip the men's space upside down. You know, it's probably similar to what mental health was 5 years ago, where it was just starting to, you know, come to light and the stigma was starting to fall away, and that's really flipped, and it's just, you know, somewhat standard conversation. It's been normalized, that space. Now I think, you know, the next space is the men. So we're excited about that, and that's kind of been going for 15 months. And then my coaching as well has been a mix of, you know, the NLP. I did some Gottman studies last year, the Gottman Institute around relationships. And yeah, that's more of a blend of both males and females looking to find more fulfillment and passion and purpose in their life, and also kind of break through, you know, a number of barriers that are holding them back from having more.
Yeah. So do you work with mostly men? Is that just that one part of the business? And then with your coaching, it's sort of a mix of human, like women and men.
Yeah, with Momentum, it's just a men's program at the moment, although there's been a lot of interest from women to, you know, put together, you know, almost like programs of what men want. But in the coaching space and the program that I'm launching in March, it's a mix. I've always got along really well with women and found, you know, I guess from the training days, probably 60, 70, maybe even 80% of my clientele was women. So when it comes to the coaching space, the one-on-one and the, you know, the other program that I'm launching, that's a mix. And it's, you know, it's a mix of them wanting to be better, them wanting to understand themselves, find more fulfillment. And for a lot of them, it's having a male perspective on, you know, things like relationships, which so many of us, you know, I guess, don't have the foundation or the knowledge to really understand why it's not working for us. And, you know, all you have to do is look at the stats to see that it's pretty obvious that the way that we're doing things and potentially our education around it isn't necessarily working for us.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's nice to have the opposite sex opinion, because men and women are so different. And I did a lot of research into relationship stuff last year, it might have been the year before, actually, 2019, Making Sense of Men is the godfather of all of it. It's just this little book that I have, and it changed everything for me. It was just so incredible and so simple to read that there was just this unique difference that we didn't see, right? And we treat men like hairy versions of women. So, yeah, it's been amazing to dive into that stuff personally. I think it's so fantastic that you guys are doing that. And I love that you're doing the men's health stuff. I really think that is so great, because so much men need this and it's not talked about enough. I've talked to so many men. I mean, I've got a friend who's almost 50 and they don't talk about this stuff. They connect and play poker weekly, or they do whatever they do, but there's no actual depth or connection being built. And so then all the serious stuff just comes out of nowhere and they're like, oh, why didn't you say something? But there's not that space to have. So I love that you guys are doing that. And I mean, tell us a little bit more about that. Can we talk about the men's health stuff? Because I think that's really important, and being emotionally available, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, it actually originally stemmed from, I guess, my lack of having those type of people around. You know, when it comes to connection, I connect really easily with women. And, you know, I could easily have 1, 2, 3, 4 hour DMs with, you know, good girlfriends over the phone. So there was actually a selfish element to it of like, I actually want to find more blokes that I can kind of connect with on a deeper level. And you know, you could, I've been through situations where I've had mates for 20 years and I feel like I don't really know them, you know, and one of the really strong epidemics I kind of see coming through is loneliness. And loneliness for me isn't necessarily a lack of people, but a lack of proper connection. You know, you could have 100 people in the room and feel like you're not seen, heard, understood, or that no one really gets you. And then, you know, you feel like you're kind of in that room alone. So it's a big part, and it's the same Aussie, you know, standard kind of stuff of like you go to the pub, you know, you're watching the footy, having a beer, and it's like, oh, mate, how's your week? Good.
Yeah.
You know, how's your partner? Good. And it's like, fuck, like that's dry.
No depth.
That's real dry. So, you know, one of the things that we do is it's a combination of obviously them finding what lights them up through their values, you know, really big piece around mission and really the importance of that from the masculine point of view. If a bloke isn't aligned with his true mission, he's not going to be anywhere near the best version of himself. So it's really important, that level of deep self-discovery, so that then you can be a better, you know, person to your partner, your kids, your work colleagues, you know, to the world really. And, you know, like I said, a lot of these guys, there's a strong stigma that comes with the men's space. And, you know, if they're looking to dip their toe in for the first time, you really need to be able to find that entry point. You can't go straight into an eye gazing exercise or, or dancing in the bush together and hugging for 3 minutes and just, you know, holding the space. Blokes aren't quite ready for that. So we see ourselves as fairly relatable guys. You know, we love the work and we can also go and have a beer, you know, watch the footy, whatever it may be. And I feel, you know, my personal opinion, and I'm fairly open to everything and anything, is that when I went to go to some of these, you know, men's workshops or whatever it may be, I felt really awkward.
Mm.
And we can't afford, with the state of men's health, to have these guys dip their toe in for the first time, feel fucking awkward, and then go and close the door, because they're looking for a reason. You know, a lot of them are looking for the reason to close the door, go, oh, that was real weird. Confirmation bias, it's already backing up their belief that they've got around it, and then they step out. So that's been our big thing of really staying relatable. You know, we've got kind of a little motto of like REV, of relatable, educational and vulnerable. And it's important that we kind of lead in all three of those. And, you know, the vulnerable piece, you know, we've been talking about for years now as to why it's not a weakness and breaking the stigma around that. And I look at, you know, I guess the mental health space, and we've actually brought a psychologist on for this reason as well. There's been a really good job of creating strong awareness over the last 5 years and breaking through the stigma, but I'm not sure that there's the support systems and the programs to follow that up, where blokes can go, okay, I'm now aware that I've got a mental health problem, or, you know, I now don't have the stigma around it, but like, where's the backup to kind of support me and help build me back up through this? So that's been a big part for us. And, you know, I think there's so much room for other people to do similar stuff in the men's space, and us as a collective really build some foundations and some fundamental programs that help these guys kind of move forward and step into that space.
I love that. And I love that you share about the awareness piece, because that's a big part of it in the beginning. And as you said, over the last 5 years, say that there has been that shift, but where do they go and who do they support? And I know my friend Justin does a lot of stuff on this, and he's doing an incredible job in this space. And what he had shared was that you go to these counselors and psychologists, but they just make you talk it through over and over and over, but you're not necessarily getting the tools and things like that to actually progress forward. So do you guys, how do you support men by doing that? Do you have like groups and get togethers? Do you do online programs? And like, cause isn't it back in the day with the American Indians or whatever, and they had like campfires for men to sit around and chat? Like, we don't do that anymore, right?
Nah. I mean, there's a lot of things that we don't do. I think one of the big things, you know, I definitely don't have the headspace for it at the moment, with, you know, I'm kind of feeling quite stretched with what I'm doing already. But one of the things that would be really cool to see come back in is a rites of passage, which, you know, is that program essentially for 14 to 15-year-old guys that help them transition from boyhood to manhood. And that used to be around, and that's kind of gone as well. But, yeah, for us it's very much around, you know, having the programs, the support groups, and, you know, ideally when this whole COVID stuff passes by, retreats and experiences in person that really help them connect and bring it all together. You know, there's a great level of connection that we create in the programs, you know, in terms of online, but it would be taken to a new level when, you know, the boys get around each other in person as well. So that's a big bit. And, you know, we host a free chat each week, which is a really nice spot for the guys to come in and just see that we're a right fit for them. And if that is the case, then they can kind of go on and do one of our programs, workshops, you know, and retreats as well. But I like it, the whole thought of a campfire to sit around and have a chat, but it's also the tools. And I think one of the challenges, you know, for a lot of the guys in the space is traditionally, I guess, until things are starting to change now, you had two real strong extremes. You had the psychologist, the psychiatrist, and at the other end, the very spiritual kind of well-rounded. And I'm lucky to have, you know, friends in at both ends. And I'm also aware that for a lot of guys in this kind of space, in terms of, you know, your average Aussie bloke, they actually don't feel that comfortable going to either of them. So, you know, the psychologist that we brought on board is very much, again, an Aussie bloke, you know, loves his footy and is very kind of relatable. And I think that's a big thing, you know, to feel like you can connect with someone. And obviously the psychologist, psychiatrist and a lot of people in the spiritual space are very well versed and obviously, you know, have the qualifications and everything as well. But if you're not feeling a sense of connection with that person, then the chances of you coming back or even opening up are limited. So it's finding that mix of, you know, the academic with all the qualifications, but also the ability to connect properly with people and not look at that patient, so to speak, as a number and a statistic, which, you know, a lot of people have come to us and said, that's how I felt when, you know, I went to whoever it might have been.
Yeah, and then, you know, if they have that experience, then potentially they go down the path of not ever fixing themselves because of that and they've been shut off from it. So I think it's amazing you have that space. And so do you think there's this whole unhealthy masculine and ego type thing that's causing this pressure for men, say, or where do you think it all fits when it comes to that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at the masks that blokes wear, one of them's definitely the ego. And, you know, we've spent so much time interviewing women, speaking to women as to get a good understanding of, you know, what they desire in men. And the reoccurring themes are definitely around ego and also integrity, you know, in terms of doing what you say you're going to do. Those are probably the two most common themes. And there's a lot of ego that floats around, you know, obviously I've spoken of my struggles with that in the past and how that really derailed things for me. And, you know, a lack of awareness, I think, as well is a really big piece. So if you're a female and you're trying to get through to your partner, but you've got layers of stigma around the work, you've got ego, you've got lack of awareness, you've got lack of making it a priority, you know, it's super challenging for a female to pierce through each of those layers to finally have them open up from a place of humility and go, okay, I need help, or I need work, or I, you know, I'm going to take this upon myself to make change. And, you know, I think even if you're looking at the dynamic of a, you know, a heterosexual relationship, it's not the most attractive thing for a female to have to mother you know, their boyfriend, partner, husband into the space and to do the work. So it's really important for these guys to go, you know what, like, let me go and do the work on my own. Mm-hmm. And even if you look at, you know, which for me this is really mind-blowing, but I really like it, the work of David Data, who you know, I'm a big fan of. He's like, the blokes are the ones who should be actually leading the way when it comes to growth and expansion.
But it's not the case.
Oh, no. That'd be like 1 in 10,000, I reckon, honestly. So it'd be really nice. You know, it comes back to masculine and feminine energy. Do you prefer to lead or be led? Mm. And I can only imagine, you know, from the female point of view, it'd be really nice to be led into growth and expansion by, you know, the partner, as opposed to being, you know, mummy.
Nagging
and leading him into it. So yeah, it's an exciting space. It's obviously very much in its infant stage, but it's good for everyone. You know, the more work that's done in this, it'll open blokes up to be happier, healthier, it'll be good for relationships, and hopefully, you know, the true feminine can somewhat surrender back into, you know, who they are, and also start to kind of trust in the masculine, and probably be a little bit more turned on and passionate about the masculine as well when it's coming from that place.
I think it's such a crazy world we live in though right now when talking about the masculine and feminine energy, because I know for me personally, I have to drop back into my feminine energy at the end of the day, or, you know, if I'm dating someone, because I'm always in my masculine and I'm independent and I'm driven and I'm successful and all those things. But we sit in that space. Whereas, you know, 30 years ago when my mom was a mom, like with kids, she was the nurturer. She was the homebody. She didn't work. My dad worked, and the balance was really natural. So for me, that's what I was looking for. But then you end up in these relationships where there's men who are traumatized. They don't want to look at their shit, and you're always pointing their stuff out, and they don't want to go deeper. And then, you know, there's this whole like World War III happening in your relationship, and all you're trying to do is help them expand. But it's so, you know, it's such a big thing. And like you said, you do, you come across in this nagging sense, but all you're trying to do is help evolve the relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think more women over the years, let's say, have connected back to their spirituality or feminine energy and are trying to do that, yet the masculine hasn't really found the groove just yet. So there is that weird dance between the two. Is there ways that men can do, you know, step more into their masculine and lead, do you think? Like, is there any practical tools? Because I know there are a lot of men that listen to this podcast now. Mm. Is there anything you can guide people? Where do men start?
Well, the biggest piece to it, so if you're looking at core energy being the energy that you're born with, assuming, you know, to break it down really quickly before we step forward, at the core energy, 80% of men are masculine, 10% are neutral, and 10% are feminine. So talking about males in the masculine, so talking about the 80%, the first thing you need to do is be clear on your mission. Yeah. And there's not enough education or push for men to really find that. And, you know, I think if you look at societal norms, they've led men down a path that isn't necessarily in line with that. And, you know, if you don't really know yourself, you fall into the category of standing for what society stands for. So for a lot of these blokes, you know, one of the challenges they've got is they're buying into societal norms, and they're buying into societal expectations and values. So, you know, the value of money or a nice car or, you know, a body or whatever it may be, and going, well, fuck, like I get there and then what? Oh, maybe I need more money. I need a bigger house. I need a shinier car. I need a, you know, hotter girlfriend, whatever it may be. So you just keep on the hamster wheel of, you know, society's definition.
Never
been
enough. It's like never
totally. And it's never enough. So for a lot of these guys, I guess when you're coming back to, you know, point one is definitely finding their mission, passion or purpose and meaning, and also knowing what they really stand for, not what mum and dad wanted them to stand for and they're bought into that, not what their girlfriend, wife, partner wants them to stand for, knowing what you are truly about. And for a lot of us, there's not enough moments of stillness, silence or solitude to really like tap into self, you know, whether it's meditation. You know, for me, Vipassana, 10-day silent meditation retreat was the best thing I ever did to really go, oh, like that's what I stand for and that's what I'm about. And, you know, most of these blokes respectfully wouldn't know their ass from their ear because they haven't had enough time to just be, because they're in the doing the whole time. And when you're in the doing, sometimes it can be really hard to know what you're truly about. So, you know, albeit that a little woo-woo, I think it's really starting to develop a deep understanding of self and also knowing what your meaning is. You will automatically move more into your masculine if you're living in alliance with your true meaning or mission.
So it's about slowing down and getting still, right, and connecting, because, I mean, do you believe the answers are within us? Is that where they can find them?
Very woo-woo, but a lot of the answers are within us. And I think one of the challenging things, it comes back to the indoctrination and the programming of, like, you've been programmed down a certain path. And if that's your truth, awesome, keep going. But for a lot of us, that's actually not our truth. So the other thing that makes being really challenging is from a young age, there's a positive feedback loop around the doing. Oh, Jimmy did really well at sport today. Jimmy did this, Jimmy did that. Jimmy doesn't get love for just sitting on the couch and being himself. It's always you get rewarded and you get acknowledged from such a young age in the doing that it creates the feedback loop, and you're like, okay, I'll get acknowledged by mum and dad if I, and then I'm in the doing. And obviously the doing is very masculine anyway. And for a lot of these guys, there is no being. You know, there's a quote along the lines of man's greatest struggle is to sit with himself. And I like honestly believe that. And, you know, I think for a lot of blokes, their biggest struggle would be to go and do a 10-day Vipassana where it's like, what do I do? I just sit here and meditate for 11 hours and listen to my thoughts and really, you know, have a deep understanding of self. But I think every bloke needs to do it. And, you know, for me, ideally, I'd like to do it every year. This year's somewhat of a challenge with, you know, a race I'm doing. I can't really afford to take 10 days off, but it's so good for you and gives you a really deep understanding of self.
Yeah, because we're so stuck in that always achieving, always succeeding, always driving for the next thing.
Mm.
So getting back to that silence. So were you then, like, let's go back a little bit to your childhood. Like, I think I've heard you speak about traumas or things. Like, what was it like growing up? And, you know, from my understanding is that, you know, through the ages 0 to 7, we really are programmed and we learn a lot of our stuff. Talk to us about that. And then is that what kind of led you to do NLP and break through some of those things?
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, everyone has their struggles. But for me, it was pretty bad in terms of, you know, physical and mental abuse. And there was never really any kind of steadiness in my home environment. And for me as a kid, my home environment was probably was the most unsafe place for me to be. So I would prefer to be anywhere else than to be at home. And that's challenging, especially in those kind of early development years, as you say, 0 to 7. And I had it, you know, the whole way through till when I was 16. And I've got a family history of alcoholism, mental health, you know, physical abuse. And, you know, in a way, that's not ideal. And there's been a lot of stuff that I've had to work through and continue to work through. It's never ending. And at the same time, if I flip that, it's also been the fuel for my fire in terms of my passion. So part of me obviously doesn't wish that upon anyone ever. I would never want anyone to feel like the place that, you know, provides a roof over their head is the unsafest of all places. And it's also fueled the fire for who I am and what I kind of want to put out to the world. So I'm, you know, in a way I'm grateful for that. But yeah, I spent 6 months studying addictions, childhood trauma, you know, things like disassociating from your body. So for me, you know, as a coping mechanism, and a lot of us have this, whether we're, you know, so many females have been sexually, actually, it was really interesting. I heard a statistic around how many males have been sexually assaulted as well, which I was fucking mind blown. But
talk about it. That's why it's not as obvious.
Yeah, amazing. So, you know, anyone who's been through that will probably, whether they're conscious or unconscious of it, created some kind of disassociation. So they spend a lot more time in their head than their body, because to feel what you feel in those moments is just, you know, heartbreaking. You actually can't, as a kid, really sit in your body and be with that. So for a lot of my life, I created disassociation and spent so much time in my head because that was a safe place to be. And it's been a, you know, 4 or 5 year journey of getting back in touch with that. And for a lot of blokes, this is a similar thing. You know, so many female clients will be like, I feel like he's like the sleeping dead. He's just walking around numb and not really there. And I know that feeling. And, you know, for a lot of guys, when they're starting to reconnect, it's almost kind of two different languages that they've got to learn from, you know, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, sometimes 50s and 60s, the art of like, what do I feel? So the language of what do I feel? And the language of how do I express that? And you literally are teaching somewhat of a kindergarten kid how to reconnect with that bit, because for a lot of them, that's when they actually started to disconnect and they haven't developed those traits. So, yeah, it wasn't ideal, and, you know, no household is perfect, but it's really hard when you're in your, you know, primary school and teens to, one, find the words to describe what's going on at home, so no one ever knew, And two, also, you feel super lonely. You know, I was at very good prestigious schools, which was nice. And, you know, no household's ever perfect, but they all, you know, their families were still all together. And my understanding that there wasn't much going on behind the doors in terms of, you know, alcoholism, verbal, physical abuse. And, you know, 20 years on, that's been confirmed, that you obviously don't know at the time, but, you know, a lot of them have come from really healthy upbringing. So, you know, there's so much shame that comes around that, you know, so much shame and a lack of, I guess, emotional intelligence that you really don't know what to do with what you're experiencing at home. So, yeah, that's kind of where a lot of my passion stems from, and a whole lot of mental illness through the family. And obviously, you know, a family member who's been an alcoholic my whole life, you know, I've struggled at times with empathy. And I know for me, when I have a deep understanding of someone's struggle, that empathy is a lot easier. So that's the reason I went and, you know, spent 6 months studying addiction, so I could actually see it from their side of things and really understand it.
Yeah, and I can imagine it would be hard, because, I mean, we as humans should have compassion, and we should try and empathize with people doing the best they know how with their own circumstances and situations. But I'm, you know, in that environment as a child, like, you don't know what's going on, and you're creating all these stories about potentially it being your fault, or, you know, and then it leads into an adult life where you're totally messed up and you have to do the work and unpack everything, right? But that's the journey of, like, personal development and growth, and it's, you know, partly exciting at the same time. So I did hear you had lost a lot of stuff later in life too. So let's dive into that and tell me some of the lessons, because I know what it's like to go into the space of ego and then go through depression and, like, completely lose all that stuff and then reshape yourself because of that experience. And I think it's the best thing and the worst thing that can happen to you. So talk me through that period.
Yeah, well, I actually lost it all, like, literally the definition of losing it all. So it's coming up to 3 years, actually, which is the end of my time. And it's amazing to think it was 3 years ago, because it feels like a lifetime ago. But, you know, despite the business being somewhat healthy, my business was called 6W2S at the time. It was a fitness business. I actually filed for bankruptcy, yeah, just under 3 years ago. And for the male to be in that position is really challenging. I know, you know, there's been so many instances, having really unpacked that over the last few years, of guys who would prefer to commit suicide than to wave the white flag of bankruptcy, because so much of our, you know, like, we're the provider, we're the breadwinner. Yeah. It's really important that we can provide and you know, provide for family, girlfriend. Obviously, I had a girlfriend at the time. And it's, you know, it's a mix of shame, guilt, embarrassment, humiliation, all of those things that I felt. And for me, I never wanted to get in that position again. So it was really important that I understood how I got there in the first place. And, you know, 6 months prior to that, I'd done my NLP. So I could see, by the time it actually happened, I could see the writing on the wall, and I'd already started to go through the motions of working out how I got myself into that situation. And, you know, for me, that was a really low moment. And I was like, oh, you know, really struggling. And it ended up being just step one of this just capitulation for 15 months, where, you know, I guess I was in a fortunate position with the business where I just could transition from company to sole trader, and I could open the next day. But at that point, I was already dead inside when it came to the fitness business. So I closed it down a couple of months later and moved to Melbourne. I was just like, I need a fresh start. So girlfriend at the time came with me. And, you know, over the next 12 to 15 months, it just was hit after hit. And individually, they're okay. But as a collective, they really wear you down. So, you know, I went through three jobs over a six, seven month period. And even when I look back at that, you know, like, this is the whole ego bit of, like, oh, they shouldn't have fired me. Mate, if you're getting fired from three jobs in 7 months, you're not doing a very good job. The common denominator is me. So, again, people at the time were doing the best they could. They're like, oh, they've made a terrible choice. And while I was flat, you know, my biggest fear these days, obviously, is not making the most out of my life, but you know, just in behind that is getting myself into a state of delusion where I'm just like, I'm just completely full of shit. That really freaks me out because that's essentially how I got there. A lack of awareness, a lot of ego, being completely deluded, you know, somewhat skill set as well. But those things, and you just find yourself at the bottom and still in denial about it. And that was, you know, that was horrible for me. And then, you know, the car broke down, broke up with my girlfriend, you know, obviously had no money, was directionless because I was still trying to, you know, kind of knew that I liked coaching, but I didn't know where I was going. And for me, that was probably the hardest. And the reason for that is if I felt like I had direction and passion, all those other things would have still stung a lot, but I would have at least had something to kind of, you know, build on and give me focus. So I was kind of twiddling my thumbs while being in a house that I was about to get kicked out in a week with nowhere to go, no car, no, like just been fired from three jobs, was in Melbourne and hadn't really built back up the relationships that I'd had there from 20 years ago. And then, you know, I remember saying to Janoa, one of my business partners with Momentum, I was like, oh, mate, at least I've still got my physical and mental health. And God bless him, he never said anything, but I definitely didn't have my mental health at that stage. And then next week I went into hospital with what they thought was meningococcal. And in that moment, as disempowering as it sounds, I was like, fuck it, I surrender. Like, I give up. I literally have none. I've got nothing. That was my final thing that I, you know, held so much identity and weight on, was at least I've always got my physical health. And then that was taken away from me. So, you know, in terms of losing it all, I literally had nothing left to lose, which was good and bad. And, you know, for me now, I kind of dance between, you know, as I've come up out of it quite quickly, really, in hindsight. Part of me is like, fuck, you know, part of my drive is I never want to go back to that.
Yeah.
Because I just wouldn't want to have to dig myself out of that again, albeit I've got a lot more tools than I had. And part of me is also like, I've got nothing left to lose because I've also been at the bottom and I know what that feels like. Mm. So it's a dance between those two of, you know, the push and the pull of those two things. But it, you know, as you kind of said, when you've done the healing and you've done the work around it, you also see a lot of value in it, you know, and there was so much value. Like, I'm, as strange as it sounds, I'm super grateful for the breakup because I needed that as a pain point to really go, okay, I've done a lot of work, but I've still got a shitload to do. You know, I needed to get fired from three jobs to go, mate, like, you think you're good because you've been in the fitness industry for 15 years, but you still need to do your job properly. Like, I needed to go through all of those. So, you know, I still have struggles with my ego, but that was the most humbling 15 months that I could go through and that I needed to go through in order to really start to join some more dots and to turn things around.
So how did you getting to rock bottom, where did you go from there? How did you, okay, so you've surrendered, you're in the hospital bed, you pretty much have to, you've got nothing left. Where do you, like, if someone's in this place now where they feel like they're at rock bottom, like, where do you, how did you get out of that space when you probably weren't as aware as you are now of all the tools and resources that you have access to?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is, you know, I feel, I'd hate to think what I would have done had I not had the tools that I did. Mm. So that's a big first thing. Like, I remember having a moment where I was like, I get why blokes jump.
Yeah.
And that for me was obviously my kind of darkest thought. And at the same time, you know, a big thing, and God bless her, you know, girlfriend who's, you know, had the most utmost respect for, just didn't know how to manage that, which a lot of people wouldn't, you know. But the pressure that was coming from outside was so full on that it was all, that it, I think it was probably worse than what I was experiencing through just the destruction of my life. And, you know, when you look at it in hindsight, the pressure from her was purely just because she cared. You know, like, you when you really understand that, you're like, she just wanted me to get up and get out. And like, you know, that would be scary for her as well. Like,
totally.
She's seen the capitulation of her boyfriend. So that pressure for me was like, I think the moment where I had that thought where I was like, I don't think I can handle this pressure anymore. And that's where I had that real quick thought of like, I get why blokes jump. But when it came to it, you know, a couple of things that helped me start to turn things around and quickly as well. Like it was a 14 month period from, you know, September 2 years ago to September last year where, you know, up in Byron, I was like, fuck, like this is the best life I've ever lived. You know, so it's a quick, it's a real quick turnaround. But when I was in the thick of it, what I knew was what I stood for in terms of the values point of view. And I was like, okay, it's so dark in here. Like every time I entertain the idea of where's my future going, is it, you know, at 30, what was that at the time? 35 years of age, you're absolutely rock bottom. You've got no direction. When you look into the future, and like as weird as this sounds, and the people that have been through this will probably know what I'm talking, it actually looks black and dark. You actually can't see anything. And for me, that gave me such chronic anxiety. I was like, okay, I knew the little the Buddhist philosophy of depression lives in the past, anxiety lives in the future, peace lives in the present. I was like, okay, every time I try to entertain the idea of the future, it makes me feel like sick with anxiety. So I was like, how do I win the day? And for me, I knew what I value. I knew I valued exercise, I valued growth, I valued nutrition, hydration, sleep, and connection. I was like, okay, if I can just tick those six boxes today, I'll address tomorrow. And, you know, I knew in my head that there was light at the end of the tunnel. I had no idea how long it was going to be. And at times that gave me anxiety, but I was like, just focus on today. So just keep coming back today. And although plant medicine isn't legal in Australia, it was really, you know, I did an ayahuasca ceremony. And in that moment kind of came to me of like, you need to help men.
That's awesome.
So, you know, this was a week after I was in hospital. I remember ringing Janara in, he was in Sri Lanka, sipping pina coladas at the time. And I rang him. I was like, mate, I'm really keen to do some work with men. What do you think? And I think he'd had a fair few. And he's like, yeah, mate, sounds like a good idea. And I think he just thought that, you know, I'd brush it off. And then I rang Deals, a mate in Melbourne, who I wasn't that close with at the time, but I knew he was really interested in the space. I was like, mate, got this idea. He's like, yeah, keen. So from that literally rock bottom in hospital to doing a plant ceremony, 6 weeks later, we launched our first event in Sydney. And then another 6 to 8 weeks after that, launched our event in Melbourne. So it's, you know, I know Rich, I'm a big fan of a guy called Rich Roll, who has a podcast and he's a really savvy guy. He was, you know, had an addiction, an alcoholic. And for him, it wasn't until he stopped fighting the addiction that he started moving forward. And as much as it sounds disempowering to wave the white flag, which is, you know, sometimes I still beat myself up about it, I literally had to surrender and go like, give me a sign, give me something and to point me in some kind of direction. Mm. And, you know, for me, I really pride myself on fighting and having a fairly strong level of grit and resilience. So it was against everything that I believed to be true, but it wasn't until I let go that I really joined the dots. And I think that kind of ties in with what I said earlier around, you know, we work with a lot of guys who are trying to find their new, you know, reinvent themselves, and they're always in the doing. And for them, it's somewhat emasculating, and it probably says a little bit about their relationship with the feminine, but it's somewhat emasculating to sit back and go, okay, I'm just going to let it come to me. But it's in those moments of being that often something drops in.
Yeah.
So it's that dance between the being and the doing where it's like, oh, that makes me happy, or, oh, I really like the path that that person's taken. And then you start to, you know, unfold it. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people struggling, but what I really, you know, I guess want to kind of emphasize is it can turn around so quick. Like for me, from literally rock bottom, you know, September 2018, to by the end of that month having the idea of momentum, and then, you know, to September 2019 living literally my best life, you know, it can turn around so quick. So it's important, you know, I guess everyone's got their own motivation and inspiration, but for me, whenever I was at rock bottom, I needed something like that. I needed to hear someone's story. I needed to watch a motivational video to give me the faith, to give me the hope that it can turn around, and also that, you know, so many of the people you know, so many of our favourite thought leaders and experts have also been in a similar position at some stage, and that became the catalyst and the passion and the fuel for their fire.
Yeah, and I always say, like, coaches are wounded healers. Like, we really, our mission in life, as if these are, you know, your true coaches that live for coaching. That's another topic for another day. But I really believe we've been gifted the challenges that we've been through to then push us into that exploration of each topic. Like you said, you studied addiction and all these different things because of what you went through. And you may not have ever moved through that ego stuff. Potentially you would have, but what happened to you then led you to where you were meant to be. And that's why we have to have that gratitude for the craziest times, because as much as, like, they're awful through the experience, they're the greatest gift to us, you know. Our pain is definitely the greatest gift. So for sure, and it sounds like you're definitely in alignment and you can see it, you know, your energy. And I knew you years ago. I think I even did one of your old fitness things. And then to see you here now is amazing, because you are glowing and you are definitely in alignment, which is really cool. So values, like we mentioned that just then, I think is really key for people to know. How does someone determine what their values are? Because, you know, this gets dropped a lot. DeMartini talks about this, that people talk about values. How do we figure this out if we don't know what our values are?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I'm actually reading his values book again now, so the timing's really nice on this. But, you know, different people have different ways of determining values. One of the approaches that I take is, what do you value and what are your values? And the reason I do that is, what do you value? I tend to think more as kind of external or tangible things, career, relationship, you know, connection, whatever it may be. And then what are your values? What do you stand for? Leading by example, integrity, whatever it may be. So when it comes to what do you value, you'll often find that firstly, it's connected to your upbringing. So when I take someone through this exercise, I get them to do what's called an origin story, which highlights the pain and pivotal moments of their life. And often I can see somewhat of a sequence in that that then determines their values. And then I can help them often formulate somewhat of a life design based on that. But if you're trying to work out what do you value, then it's often what you fill your house with. It's what lights you up. It's what you spend money on. It's what consumes your kind of thought processes. So if I had someone's last 3 months of their bank statements, I could probably tell based on that what it is that they really value. Like for me, you know, I've got my Kindle here. I probably buy, I don't know if I'm ever going to get through all the books I've bought, but I probably buy 5 books a month.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah,
I've got a book challenge from Christmas to Christmas. I'm reading as many as I can, and I read like 1 book a week. And I've like got this library. Yes, it only takes 6 to 7 hours to read a book, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm 2 books a month, but I have heard a lot of actually someone I was seeing earlier last year did the same thing 2 years ago, where she read a book a week for the whole year. I was like, that's amazing. So I'm 2 books.
That's great.
So 24. But yeah, I just, you know, even if I was on my deathbed, I'd probably have the Kindle next to me.
Yeah.
And I'd be researching and reading. So that, you know, when you start to think about that, it really starts to help you unpack that. And if you can get, you know, for me, I'm in a really fortunate position where, you know, creating my own life by life design, you know, I pretty much hit most of my values before I actually start the day. So what I mean by that is I wake up at 5 and I don't actually really start work till 9.
Yeah.
So in that time, I get a chance to meditate, journal, train, eat, read, and do, you know, some kind of finance and stuff. And then I actually start my day at 9. So I'm lucky that I've got a 4-hour morning routine. Most people obviously don't have that, but to create some kind of routine based around your values is a really good way to start your day. And it doesn't matter if it's 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 50, whatever you've got, just finding a way to hit those touch points is really important. And as I said to you, you know, if you look at core energy of a masculine, there's a real deep desire for meaning, mission, or purpose. And then from the feminine point of view, keeping in mind we've got both of them within us, is a real desire for connectedness, love, radiance, life force. So beyond all the values, it's really important to know your true energy and be able to fulfill that as well.
Yeah, and I think it's nice to be able to dance between the two as well, as both men and women, because there are times where you need to be a bit more submissive or lean back, or, you know, be a bit more in the flow. So I think it's important to recognize that men and women can both manage both of those sort of energies. So I know you just touched on your morning routine, but I'd love to dive into that a little bit more, because I can only assume someone successful or someone that really prides themselves in personal growth has daily non-negotiables. And are you doing a marathon or an Ironman or something at the moment?
Yeah, I'm doing an Ironman. So I've got a while. I've got till December to do it. So I'm the one in Busselton, I think it's called, in WA. So that is a lot of training, and will only get bigger as the year goes on. So it's almost like a part-time job. You know, I've probably got 15 hours a week of training at the moment, and that'll go up to 20. So also being mindful that I need to just adjust things, and I really need to, you know, one of my, I guess, previous struggles has been shiny object syndrome, where I'd bounce from one thing to another. So, you know, one of the things I've been really proud of myself since moving to Byron is just how structured I am, and you know, as a result, my productivity, my clarity, everything's kind of gone through the roof. But in terms of my non-negotiables, you know, obviously personal development and growth is my number one value. So reading, learning, watching podcasts is in there every day. But yeah, it starts at 5 in terms of meditation and journal. And the really good thing with, I guess, where I'm at, you know, through Momentum, our men's business, and also Tribe, one of my kind of the mastermind I'm building, is the accountability, you know, because there's definitely, you know, one of the things I think we lose sight of is thinking that it's easy for, you know, everyone on social media, they just must have some kind of superpower that the rest of us, you know, didn't get. We had some kind of genetic defect. But for me to have that level of accountability, you know, in days where I don't feel like it, like I have to train this afternoon and I'm pretty knackered, but, you know, to have that accountability and just to continue to lead by example and show up is really important. So the meditation, the journaling, you know, training, breakfast, read, and then I start my day are just non-negotiables. And I know if that's all I achieved that day that I'd be stoked, because it's hit those sweet spots for me. So that's really good. And then, you know, I'm really big on connecting, and I'm so fortunate through the businesses that I've got that brings about proper connection. And, you know, if for whatever reason I didn't get a chance to speak to a friend on the phone throughout the course of the day, and at the moment I'm pretty bad with being on the phone, just how stretched January's been for me, but I know I'm always going to get those touch points, you know, on a daily basis through coaching, through, you know, Momentum, and also my own kind of business as well. So yeah, I couldn't be happier. Well, who knows? There's some cool stuff happening. Yeah, I'm not going to put a glass limit on it, but, you know, the old saying, I couldn't be happier. Like, that's literally been my last 7-8 months. I feel the best I've ever felt. And again, you know, it was only, 18, 19 months ago that I was the worst I've ever been. So, you know, it kind of reiterates that you can turn things around really quickly.
Yeah, it's awesome. So what are you currently reading at the moment? Do you read one book at a time or two?
I read one, just because I do have that little kind of shiny object syndrome. So I actually am reading The Values Factor, just because I'm refining my value section within my course. And then there's some, I've found, I actually have a book called Pussy, The Reclamation, which I'm really interested in. Yeah, so I'm going to read that next. I, you know, a lot of the stuff that I'm into is still very much taboo amongst mainstream, but I have no problem with that. And I think, you know, there's a real, I'm really interested in sexuality, psychedelics, a lot of things that, you know, have a stigma around them. And I believe that we should kind of break many of those stigmas for the good of everyone. So I do look into a fair bit of relationships. And again, you know, relationships is a big one. I came from a broken family and I've had a lot of challenges in my own relationships in the past. So I'm really drawn to understanding those better. You know, everything from relationships to sexuality to peak performance, mindset, well-being, this kind of big space that, you know, I don't know if I'll ever, you know, I think I'm sure you feel the same. The more you know, the more you realize you don't know, and just yes. how big it is, which is exciting. It's sure. really exciting. So, I can't get enough of learning. And for someone who failed year eight and hated school, it's quite ironic, but it also has plenty to do with what I believe to be interesting about the system and the way that we go about many things.
Yeah, for sure. We could definitely do a second podcast on the system. So when you read, do you take notes? Like, is that how you read?
Yeah. So I read off the Kindle.
Yeah.
And again, minimalist lifestyle. So, you know, at one point I would have had a very similar kind of bookshelf to yours.
Oh, yeah, you can see it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Limitless is on my book list as well, actually. But, so I read off the Kindle and then I put it all into Google Notes,
yeah.
All the key points. So I've got, 40 or 50 books of Google Notes there, which sometimes I share with clients or, with the boys at Momentum if they're looking to dig into a topic, and often go back to reference them for ideas on social or just reinforce some things as well.
Yeah, I really enjoy your social, and I think it'll be great for people to be able to connect with you on there because you are, sharing a lot of value and a lot of insights potentially from what you're reading or what you're studying as well. So before we dive into where people can find you, is there anything else that you want to leave us with today?
No, just I'm stoked to connect properly with you. And, one of the big things for me is there's so many amazing coaches and leaders, even in this small little country of Australia, that have so much to offer people and so many answers. And, there's a lot of people sitting, listening and consuming your content and people's content. And my big thing is, just be mindful of what I call the mental masturbation, where you just consume the content and don't take action, or you don't follow up and speak with a coach. And I think the big thing is there's so many amazing ones that you really want to find who resonates with you, and just leap, take the leap and, back yourself, because your world can transform really quickly if they're working with you or any of the amazing guests that you have on. I think it's really important.
Yeah, I think there's so much value in investing, depending on where you're at in your life or who you connect with or what you're wanting to grow. If you connect with the right person and invest with the right person, it propels you so fast forward. So it's awesome. So where can people find you to then connect with you online and send you a DM or slide into the DMs?
Slide into the DMs. Why not? Definitely Instagram's the best spot. So at Blake Worrell Thompson. And, as I said, I think it's really important just to, whether it's coaching or whatever you're kind of interested in, is just to really feel into the person, make sure the message resonates. Like some of my messages might not. I've got some kind of pretty left opinions, and that's okay, and sparks some interesting discussions every now and then on Insta. But, really, sit there, consume it, see if it feels right. And if it does, then hit me up and we can chat. But yeah, I think the most important thing these days is to really find someone that you connect with, you click with, and you resonate with.
I agree totally. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been such a pleasure.
Beautiful. Thanks for having me.
Wow, another amazing episode. And I know I say that every time, but I swear I just get these amazing guests on and just enjoy chatting to them, especially men like Blake who are doing incredible things for the men in the world, because there is a lot of stuff out there for women. And I think like Blake shared today, there's such an indifference when it comes to it. There's, a scale where at one end it's super spiritual and woo-woo and men are not interested, or it's that full psychology path. So having that blokey experience like Blake and his friends are contributing to the world is so incredible. So I do hope you enjoyed today's episode with Blake. It would mean the absolute world to me if you could screenshot it, pop it up in your story, share it with your audience. Be sure to tag me at I Am Rebecca Neal or Rebecca Neal the Podcast so that I can share it over on my stories as well and see that you guys are tuning in. And if you're new around here, thank you so much, because without you, I couldn't continue this podcast and growing it. We need an audience for people to listen to and have the guests on the show. So do feel free to leave a review as well, because this helps me get seen and mean that more amazing guests will come on the show for you guys as well. I really hope that you enjoy the rest of your day, and I look forward to connecting with you over on Instagram in the DMs.